yesterday's prophecies, today's headlines. This is the Hal Lindsey Report. And now, Hal Lindsey.
Good evening and welcome to this edition of the Hal Lindsey Report. If you're a regular viewer of the program, you've heard me discuss the four distinct spheres of world power the Old Testament prophets predicted for the last days. We're seeing them develop so rapidly that I felt we needed to review the role they'll play in the end time scenario. The prophet Daniel foretold the rise of the Roman Empire, its fall from political power, and its ultimate revival in the last days. Daniel chapter 2, verses 41 through 43 said it would share some of the strength of the fourth kingdom, Rome, but in a weakened form, like iron mixed with clay. In that you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron. It will be a divided kingdom, but it will have in it the toughness of iron, inasmuch as you saw the iron mixed with common clay. As the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of pottery, so some of the kingdom will be strong, and part of it will be brittle. And in that you saw the iron mixed with common clay, they will combine with one another in the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, even as iron does not combine with pottery. Now allow yourself to ponder this incredible prophecy in the light of today's events. In fact, if you watch and listen to the daily news, you'll see various parts of these prophetic themes repeatedly. Daniel's description of the final form of the Roman Empire came as part of a five-part prediction that outlined the future history of Israel. The Jews were conquered by four successive world empires, exactly as Daniel predicted. First Babylon, then Media-Persia, Alexander's Greek Empire, and finally the Roman Empire. There remains an unfulfilled final week of years during which Israel will be subordinated to the reincarnate Roman Empire led by the Antichrist. For 2,000 years after Rome's fall, the nations of Europe fought an endless series of wars aimed at reviving the old European Empire of Rome. For those same 2,000 years, there was no Israel to experience Daniel's 70th week, which was absolutely necessary. In 1948, Israel declared its rebirth on its ancient homeland. That same year, Europe began to come together in a grand economic alliance, forging a new pan-European empire by peaceful means for the first time since the fall of Rome. The first sphere of global influence in the last days, the revived Roman Empire, is, as Daniel prophesied, partly strong and partly weak. What divides it are the competing self-interests of the member states in a democratic alliance. And if you read the newspaper, you know that the tremendous wealth and strength of some members of the European Union is compromised by the enormous weakness and financial distress of other members. So the entity we know as the Eurozone is strong on paper, but weak and vulnerable in reality, like iron and clay. Now, the second sphere of global power was predicted in detail by the prophet Ezekiel, would you believe, 2,650 years ago? Like Daniel, his prophecy required the existence of a nation called Israel at the same point in history as his prophesied alliance. Ezekiel predicted a partnership between this power and Persia, or modern Iran, together with many others that would launch an invasion against the reborn state of Israel. Echoing Daniel's prophecy, Ezekiel wrote, "And you will come from your place out of the uttermost parts of the north, and you shall come up against my people Israel like a cloud to cover the land. In the latter days I shall bring you against my land." Now, some people unfamiliar with this prophecy may ask, how do you identify Russia as the one described in this prophecy as Gog? There are three clear clues. The first clue is the time factor. This event happens in the last days, shortly after the Jews have been brought from their predicted worldwide dispersion and made a nation again. Ezekiel prophesied about the power from the north this way. After many days you will be summoned. In the latter years you will come into the land that is restored from the sword, whose inhabitants have been gathered from many nations to the mountains of Israel, which had been a continual waste, but its people were brought out from the nations and are living securely, all of them. The second clue is the geographical home from which this power comes. It comes from the uttermost or extreme north. That's the meaning of the Hebrew word used here. It's the uttermost or extreme north from Israel. Whenever directions are given in prophecy, they assume Israel as the center point, unless noted otherwise. Now, there's only one nation to the uttermost or extreme north of Israel, Russia. The third clue is ethnic. Ezekiel predicts the tribal forefathers that merged together and became known as the modern ethnic Russian people. Son of man, set your face toward Gog of the land of Magog, the prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal, and prophesy against him. These names are mentioned in an ancient history as living to the north of the Caucasus Mountains. Herodotus, a noted Greek philosopher of the 5th century BC, wrote of Meshach and Tubal. He identified them in his time as the Samaritans and the Muscovites who lived in the northern Asia Minor. Do you note the sound Muscovite? Probably Moscow came from that word. Josephus, an important Jewish historian of the late 1st century AD, wrote of a people of his day known as the Muscovy and the Tobalites, who were founded by Meshach and Tubal, respectively. He also said that the people called Magog were now called the Scythians by the Greeks. It's the Scythians who are known as the primary ethnic origin of the Russian people after the 5th century. The amazing prophecy should convince the staunchest critic that only God could inspire such accuracy of events some 2,650 years before they happened. The idea of a new Russia became popular in the 1990s after the disintegration of the Soviet Union. There were visions of a new, vibrant Russian partnership. The Bible envisions no such peaceful East-West partnership. Russia's role in the last days is that of a hostile invader who ultimately marches at the head of a Persian-Islamist alliance against Israel. Ezekiel predicts this will happen at a time when Israel will be a land of unwalled villages. This apparently refers to a false security that will result from a predicted covenant that guarantees their security. The problem is that the one who guarantees it is the Antichrist of Rome. Ezekiel prophesies that the Russians will be drawn into this conflict as if it had hooks in its jaws. In the last few years, not only has Russia built Iran's nuclear reactors, but it has supplied weaponry to protect them. It has also become Iran's prime protector in the United Nations Security Council. An Israeli attack against Iran's nuclear facilities would whip up Islamic sentiments to a fever pitch. And Russia having billions of dollars at stake, and no doubt many casualties among the Russian nationals working at the nuclear sites, would be under considerable domestic pressure to retaliate against Israel. The word picture painted by Ezekiel of a reluctant Russian bear goaded into an Iranian Islamic invasion of Israel is stunning, especially given the time frame. He says it will be in the last days when Israel is once again a nation in its historic homeland. Thank you so much for standing with me as a watchman on the wall. I pray daily that he will reward your faithfulness and protect and prosper you in these difficult times. Thank you again for being a vital part of my team. The book of Revelation introduces the third sphere of global power that will be a major player in the last days, the kings of the East. Little is mentioned in the Bible about this Asian world power until the climactic events of the tribulation that lead to Armageddon. What is strange about the introduction to this power is that God releases four powerful fallen angels that are so violent they have been bound at the river Euphrates for centuries. Revelation chapter 9, verses 13 through 18 predicts who these four angels will stir into action and what they will be led to do. Listen, I heard a voice saying to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, "Release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates." And the four angels who had been prepared for the hour and day and month and year were released so that they would kill a third of mankind. The number of the armies of the horsemen were 200 million. I heard the number of them. And this is how I saw in the vision the horses and those who sat on them. The riders had breastplates the color of fire and of hyacinth and of brimstone. And the heads of the horses are like the heads of lions. And out of their mouth proceeds fire and smoke and brimstone. A third of mankind was killed by these three plagues, by the fire and the smoke and the brimstone, which proceeded out of their mouth. This is a description of something far in the future of ultimate technology that a first century man like the Apostle John was trying to describe. I believe what we have here are advanced mobile vehicles that can fire nuclear weapons. Now, the Bible rarely emphasizes that something that is about to happen was prepared for the exact hour, day, month, and year. Yet these four angels were carefully prepared to execute what they are about to do. It says they were released for the purpose of killing a third of mankind. The four evil angels that were bound will use 200 million soldiers that come from east of the Euphrates River, which was the ancient boundary between Asia Minor and Asia. So they come from Asia to fulfill their purpose. In chapter 16, verse 12, they're called the kings, plural, of the east. The prophecy says, "And the sixth angel poured out his bowl upon the great river, the Euphrates, and its water was dried up, that the way might be prepared for the kings of the east." The four angels that were bound at the place on the Euphrates will dry it up so that this vast army from Asia will be able to attack the armies of the king of the north, Russia, as explained in Daniel chapter 11, verses 40 through 45, which actually gives the battle plan of Armageddon. The head of these kings, plural, will undoubtedly be China. Students of prophecy have said this for at least three centuries. I have proclaimed this for 55 years. And now, what seemed unlikely then is obvious now. China is a rising superpower that will ultimately contend with the other predicted world powers for control of the world's natural resources. With that prophecy in mind, it's ominous to realize that China is working on a terrifying, lethal, carrier killer ballistic missile called the Dongfeng 21. U.S. Navy Admiral Robert Willard said that he believes the ship killer has already reached initial operational capacity and is ready for deployment. Can you imagine several aircraft carriers being wiped out in a matter of minutes? China also recently released photographs of a new fighter aircraft it is developing that looks just like the F-117A stealth fighter. China reverse engineered an F-117 stealth that had been shot down over Serbia in 1999. Professor Huang Jing from Singapore's Lee Kuan Yew School is a former advisor to China's army. He said Beijing is loosing its grip on up-and-coming field-grade officers. He said, "The young officers are taking control of strategy, and it's like young officers in Japan in the 1930s. This is very dangerous. They're on a collision course with a U.S.-dominated system. The prospect of China militarizing the way that Japan did in the 1930s is a terrifying concept. Towards the end of the first century, when the Apostle John was given the vision of the last days in the book of Revelation, that the total human population of the earth was approximately 180 million people. But in John's vision, the kings of the east fielded an army of 200 million men. That means the army in his vision was larger than the entire world population even of that time. The number of the armies of the horsemen was 200 million. I heard the number of them. Meanwhile, as these predicted alliances grow in strength and purpose, all are preparing for exactly the same eventuality. And every single one of them has some vested interest in events ongoing in Israel, drawing them irresistibly into the cauldron of Middle Eastern politics. The final sphere of global power is called in Daniel 11:40, the King of the South. The King of the North and the King of the South will make their war with the Antichrist, who is described in Daniel chapter 11, verses 36 through 39. The heart of the southern sphere of power is Mecca. Muslim nations dominate what has been called the 1040 window on the globe, which runs from Mauritania on the Atlantic coast across the north of Africa down the Arabian Peninsula and to the islands of Indonesia in the Pacific. The Muslim nations have become a power to be reckoned with because of their suicidal devotion to Islam and their willingness to die as a martyr in spreading it. Bible prophecy says that the King of the South will join forces with the King of the North, who equips them with weapons for war and leads them. In today's world, there exists a revived form of the Roman Empire, a strengthening alliance between Russia and Iran, a potential military colossus in China, and the Muslim nations linking together to form the fourth sphere of world power. Interestingly, the one unifying force that is causing the Muslim nations to set aside their sectarian hatreds and join together is their mutual loathing of the Jews and their nation in the Holy Land. All is rapidly falling into place for the ultimate conflict over who will possess Jerusalem. And that is the quarrel which will drag all the world powers into Armageddon. As of today, there's a fifth sphere of global power, but it seems to play no discernible role in the events that occur in the seven-year tribulation just before Christ returns to the earth. The United States has been Israel's protector and champion since her rebirth, but since the signing of the Oslo Accords in 1993, it has been shifting support away from Israel and toward the concept of land for peace. That's the notorious peace equation designed in Europe, which echoes Daniel's prophecy that the government of the Antichrist shall divide the land for gain, since Washington signed on to the Oslo Land for Peace formula, including the provisions that would divide Jerusalem. The United States has been subjected to escalating terror attacks, natural disasters, and abysmal loss of political prestige abroad, and so on. Zechariah prophesied that it will come about in that day that I will make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all the peoples. More precisely from the original Hebrew, all who attempt to deal with it will be severely injured, and all the nations of the earth will be gathered against it. Admittedly, how the U.S. is removed from its preeminent political position in the last days is speculation. Terror attack, financial collapse, the rapture, whatever the reason, the Bible predicts just four spheres of global power during the tribulation, not five. In this generation, We're eyewitnesses to the fulfillment of detailed and specific prophecies, thousands of years old, that could only be fulfilled once in history. The Arab-Israeli conflict was born out of the restoration of Israel in 1948. The Benelux Treaty that formed the genesis of the revived Roman Empire was signed in 1948. The Cold War that gave birth to the Soviet client state system that encompasses the Gog-Magog alliance began with the Berlin Airlift in 1948. The Communist People's Republic of China roared into existence in 1948, driving Chiang Kai-shek and nationalist China across the Straits of Formosa to Taiwan. We're now reaching the latter years of the generation that saw the birth of these alignments predicted by the ancient prophets. And God also promised that the generation that saw the rebirth of Israel would not pass away until it saw Jesus return in the clouds for his bride. That means it's time to get ready.
To support this program, send your tax-deductible gift to Hal Lindsey Media Ministries, P.O. Box 470-470, Tulsa, Oklahoma 74147. You can also support this ministry online. Visit hallindsey.com or call 1-888-RAPTURE.
According to Scripture, during the tribulation period, the world will be exactly the kind of place America is quickly becoming. Lustful, lascivious, deceitful, filled with pride and violence, and without any sort of moral compass. The description of last day's society as outlined by Paul in 2 Timothy chapter 3 perfectly mirrors the modern Western world of the 21st century. At this same time, though, there are two Americas, one that mirrors 2 Timothy and one that still believes in America under God. And by the way, morality knows no particular political parties. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the general morality of everybody in this country. At the time that God told Abraham of his intention to destroy Sodom, Abraham tried to talk him out of it. We find the exchange in Genesis chapter 18. Abraham came near and said, "Will you indeed sweep away the righteous with the wicked? Suppose there are 50 righteous within the city. Will you indeed sweep it away and not spare the place for the sake of the 50 righteous who are in it?" So God agreed to spare the city for 50 righteous men. But Abraham, knowing it was unlikely there were 50 righteous men in all the city, continued to bargain with God until he agreed to cut the number down to 10. When 10 couldn't be found, God agreed to hold off on judging the city until Lot and his family were evacuated. Despite America's greatness, there's no mention of America in Bible prophecy during the tribulation period. There's also no mention of any righteous country during that time, or any mention of the church, or any reflection of the righteousness of the church existing during the tribulation period. The Antichrist holds complete control of global power, and Revelation chapter 13 tells us that any who refuse to worship him are executed. The Bible makes no mention of any public opposition to his plan. It is impossible to imagine that being the case if the church is present, since Christian America would not stand for it. They would rather be martyred. Abraham didn't literally talk God out of it when God outlined his intention to destroy Sodom. Abraham had no need to lecture God about righteousness. The reason for the exchange is to establish the basic principle of the rapture of the church in the last days. Just as God would not judge Sodom while Lot and his family inhabited the city, God is withholding the judgment of the world that will come during the tribulation period while the church remains on the earth. But judgment is coming, which means our time here is short and there remains much left to do. You know, the most important thing you can get out of this message today, the Bible, because of fulfilled prophecy, shows us the Bible is God's Word. And God's Word tells us that every man is born with a sin nature. Because man went his own independent way and chose to reject a relationship with God. God had to, in great love, find a way to remain righteous and still be able to bring rebellious man back to himself. So he solved the problem by the second person of the Godhead stepping out of eternity into time and becoming a man, only born without sin because he had no human father. And Jesus lived a perfect sinless life so that he could take our place, every person, and die in our place for sin. In so doing, with this terrible thing he had to do, to die in a terrible death, he purchased a pardon for you. Now, if you're listening right now, you may never hear this good news again. Time is short. Right now, God is saying to you, I sent my son to die for you. He purchased a pardon for you. The pardon is free. All you have to do is turn to me and say, I'm a sinner. I receive the gift of pardon that Jesus purchased for me. Come into my life and make my life what you want it to be. Pray that prayer right now, and you'll change your eternal destiny. That's it for tonight, folks. God willing, I'll see you next week.
You've been watching the Hal Lindsey Report. To support this program, send your tax-deductible gift to Hal Lindsey Media Ministries, P.O. Box 470-470, Tulsa, Oklahoma 74147. You can also support this ministry online. Visit hallindsey.com or call 1-888-RAPTURE.